This show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
Presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump is trying to change his tone after complaining for days that a Mexican-American judge is biased against him. A long list of Republican leaders strongly criticized Trump for suggesting the judge is unfair because of his heritage. Major Garrett is here with Trump's reaction to the critics in his own party. Major, good morning.
Good morning. Donald Trump knows what he wants to do and say, but hardly anyone else attached to his campaign is on the same page. Now, Trump's instincts have brought him this far, but as this racially charged debate over a federal judge illustrates, neither Trump nor anyone attached to what passes for a campaign infrastructure is as tactical or as nimble as a general election campaign demands.
I don't care if the judge is Mexican or not. I'm going to do great with the Mexican people because I provide jobs.
In a stark reversal, Donald Trump said the Mexican heritage of a federal judge handling a class action lawsuit against Trump University was of no consequence.
Mexican or not Mexican, I want him to be just, all I want him to do is give me a fair shake.
But it was Trump who first brought up Indiana-born Justice Gonzalo Curiel's race.
I have a judge who is a hater of Donald Trump, a hater. He's a hater. What happens is the judge, who happens to be, we believe, Mexican, which is great. I think that's fine.
Trump sharpened that judgment on Face the Nation.
He's really a member of a club or society, very strongly pro-Mexican, which is all fine. But I say he's got bias. I want to build a wall. I'm going to build a wall.
President Ronald Reagan's son Michael wrote on Twitter that his father would likely not support Trump's nomination, and Senator Lindsey Graham called the remarks un-American, adding, "There'll come a time when the love of country will trump hatred of Hillary." Former rival Senator Marco Rubio also condemned the comment.
I don't think it reflects well on the Republican Party. I don't think it reflects well on us as a nation.
And Maine Senator Susan Collins, who has not yet endorsed Trump, said the party leader should apologize.
It indicates a fundamental disrespect for the judicial system.
One potential vice presidential candidate, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, took a hard line.
Once you go down that road, you destroy America.
But after Trump softened his tone, Gingrich followed.
Well, I thought he did a very good job of narrowing down his complaint, which I think, by the way, if you look at the record, is totally legitimate.
After all this incoming...
Well, you know, this is something that, as we talked about, Scott, is really unfortunate that, Mr. Trump would go down this road when, in essence, what he's asking for is a fair shake, from this judge, to bring his ethnicity into play, especially when you consider, the judge's background. I mean, at one point, his life was threatened and probably still is, from the Mexican drug cartel. And of course, Mr. Trump did not understand that La Raza was not the La Raza that he was thinking of, that leftist, group, very aggressive pro-Mexican group. He confused it. It was just a network of lawyers and judges like himself, that happened to have La Raza in their deal, in the title, it's unfortunate because when he should be talking about things that really matter, here he is defending this situation, defending, I think the indefensible, to be able to take the stand. But I think, as Newt Gingrich wisely put it, he has some ground here and there's a way to state it, looking for a fair shake, from this judge that has on several occasions ruled against him. So Trump, sees this as, prejudicial and that he's not getting a fair shake. Well, that's, there's ways to, especially when you're going to deal in the middle of a campaign. I think there's ways to ask that question. They're a little bit more delicate. But Donald Trump says the heck with political correctness and everything else tied into it. So that's one thing for sure. He has been consistent when we talk about these things. But, as we've been saying, you get those times when you think, okay, he's all together, and then you wait, and you're not surprised when another shoe drops. Well, this is Bill Martinez. We're live. It's 5 minutes after the top of the hour. We've got more coming up. Stay with us, America.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all.
America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
If it's going to be happening, it's going to be up to us. Bottom-up movement at the grassroots level, not top-down, as we've been saying. Welcome back, America. Just about 6 minutes after the top of the hour. It's Super Tuesday all across this country and the last Super Tuesday of this election cycle. And some say, thank God. Gabby Morangiello is with us, a political reporter, primarily covers the GOP presidential field with the Washington Examiner. Gabby, always good to have you with us. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, good to have you here. Well, Hillary announced last night she's got the numbers. They ran an audit on the delegate numbers. She's already got the numbers, so the heck with California. The polling looks like it's neck and neck. Bernie could possibly win California, but so what? She's got the delegates, huh?
Right. You know, last night the Associated Press declared her the presumptive Democratic nominee when you factor in both pledged delegates and superdelegates. But Bernie Sanders has continued to say that, you know, he is remaining in the race until the convention in July, and that factoring in superdelegates right now is a bit premature. You know, Democrats actually have a long history of criticizing their own nominating process, including Clinton's former aides to the former Secretary of State have previously said that perhaps superdelegates shouldn't be not play the role that they do in the Democratic nominating process. But it appears that in this election cycle, that's not a criticism that they have.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see, especially what happens in California tonight, because if Bernie Sanders does pull off a win there after Hillary Clinton's been declared the presumptive nominee, it's going to be quite the headache for her campaign.
It's going to put a lot of pressure on those superdelegates because, as we're finding out, I thought, the superdelegates were already a fait accompli, but not necessarily, is what Bernie is saying, right?
Right. Well, in the past week, Bernie has made the argument that he does poll better against Donald Trump in general election matchup polls. He is attracting a greater number of young voters to his campaign. He has a message that's really resonating with them, and that he would be a more competitive candidate between now and November. And he says that even if they can get 50 superdelegates to declare their support for him because of those factors, perhaps more will shift in his favor. So he seems to remain hopeful that there will be a movement towards him at the convention, but it really seems unlikely that that would happen at this point.
Well, you know, the Democrats have been pointing fingers to the GOP and just talking about how dismembered they are. But this goes to the convention. I mean, they're trying to put a happy face on this deal. I think potentially this could be a huge disaster because there's going to be a lot of dissatisfaction. And I'm not sure that's the place you want it on display, is it?
No, it's definitely not. And I think that they've taken this opportunity right now in the news cycle to latch onto the criticism that we're seeing out of Republicans against Donald Trump's remarks about the district court judge, yes, Gonzalo Curiel, to try and shift you know, the focus away from their own internal battles. You've seen both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders over the last week criticize Donald Trump for the comments he's made about this judge and, you know, his suggestion that he recuse himself from the case involving Trump University. You've seen a number of Democrats, you've seen the Democratic National Committee continue to release, you know, press releases notifying reporters of all of the Republicans who were blaming Trump for alienating Hispanics. So there's definitely a significant effort on their behalf to shift the focus away from battles going on the Democratic side.
Well, you've written at length over this contention with the federal judge and Donald Trump. Arnold Schwarzenegger, former governor of California, he says, you know, he's supporting, of course, the judge's position. Bill O'Reilly was doing everything he could last night, you know, to draw some reason out of Trump's response, had a one-on-one, interview with Trump. He's really in a bucket of gum unnecessarily here at a point when, you know, a lot of political pundits say, you know, at this point in the campaign, you need to be adding voters, not taking them away.
Right. It's really an interesting time for Donald Trump to take such a controversial position on something that's completely unrelated to the general election and to his campaign. I mean, it's one thing to be proposing a temporary and complete ban on Muslim Americans as far as it relates to your national security agenda. It's another thing to be bringing up litigation against one of your private business endeavors and, yep, you know, introduce that into the general election and make these comments that, again, have some Republicans saying he's doing nothing but hurting himself and his reputation among Hispanic voters, which is a demographic that he certainly needs to do well in order to make it to the White House. So, go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say with Donald Trump, because, again, this is the clash between a businessman's mindset versus a political mindset. You know, what is driving America nuts is you get a round peg in a square hole here, and that is when Donald Trump, you know, goes and he defaults into the business mode. The business mode is you take it on, and you say the things that he says as a businessman. And then politically, everybody wants to put him in that political, you know, knot hole fit there, and he doesn't fit. It's a round peg in a square hole. And those square points in that round hole create friction, and it's driving people nuts. But it's who he is.
No, it is. And it's definitely a characteristic that I think a lot of Republican leaders are having difficulties coming to terms with, or really trying to identify how they work with that side of Donald Trump, the businessman. I mean, you just last week, Paul Ryan came out and endorsed him, and 24 hours later, he was saying, you know, these comments about Judge Curiel came completely out of left field. I didn't see them coming. I didn't think that this was something that he would even introduce or bring up in an election cycle like this, especially when Hillary Clinton has been going after him so ferociously in the past week, and yet he did. And, you know, the same thing happened with Mitch McConnell. A lot of these Republican leaders were really confused as to why Donald Trump brought this up, but that goes back to, as you mentioned, he's a businessman, and this is a primary concern for him right now. It might not be related to his campaign in any way, but making sure that he's able to, you know, disseminate a message about this litigation against Trump University and convince voters that he's not a fraud is important to him, and that's why we're seeing him double down on this message right now.
Well, this is why politicians use surrogates. They use somebody else to carry their water. And I got to say this about Trump. I am really impressed with his spokesperson, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yes.
She's just doing an outstanding job. I mean, this gal has a future. I mean, she's like come out of nowhere. Obviously, she's related to one Mike Huckabee, but she's brilliant.
She certainly seems to be able to spin anything in favor of her boss, Donald Trump.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, and you love it. Look at, yes, it's the art of the spin, and there is an art to it. But she does it in a way not like Terry McAuliffe and some of these others where you go, oh, my gosh, you're just so deep in the Kool-Aid here. It's just too much for me. But I don't know. I mean, I'm impressed. I just have seen her, you know, and as you say, she's working it for her boss, and hopefully she's one of those higher-paid women on his staff. What do you think?
I sure hope so. I know he touted his pay for women, right, recently, so I hope she's one of those top earners.
Well, Gabby Morangiello, a politics reporter for the Washington Examiner. Thank you, Gabby.
This report is brought to you by Alcon. In the kitchen, vision is everything. It ensures food is cooked properly, knives are sharpened with precision, and ingredients are measured with accuracy. For the past 25 years, Chef Jeffrey Zakarian has presided over some of the country's top restaurants. Like other chefs, wearing glasses while cooking began to affect his performance, so he looked for an alternative option. With Alcon Daily's Total One contact lenses, he found a reliable and comfortable solution.
A kitchen can be an obstacle course. It's critical I clearly see everything that's happening around me. If my glasses fog up or get in the way, or my contact lenses are uncomfortable, it can impact my performance. The water gradient technology in the Daily's Total One contact lenses deliver all-day comfort, helping me perform at my best in the kitchen and throughout the day. Sometimes I even forget I'm wearing them.
The unique water gradient technology behind Daily's Total One contact lenses provides a cushion of moisture that delivers all-day comfort. For more information, visit dailystotalone.com.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
Are your Google search results killing you? Unflattering content in blogs, news articles, online reviews, social media, or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771. Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IVC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IVC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IVC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Listening to Bill Martinez live.
I love you, baby, and if it's quite all right, I see you, baby, on the lonely night. I love you, baby.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live. Online
at BillMartinezLive.com.
Hey, whether it's online, on your smartphone, anywhere amongst our 280 affiliates across this country, welcome, America. Good to have you joining in on all the good fun as we come shoulder to shoulder and back to back, do the heavy lifting to get this country back on track. Thank you for being a part of the solution and not part of the problem. And I understand the dynamic tension between those two entities. Sometimes in being a part of the solution, it may look like you're adding to the problem. But that's the way things happen, you know, when you confront these issues that need to be confronted, especially when they haven't been confronted for so long. And this has been the case here in this great country of ours. But if you're serious about doing some heavy lifting, hey, it's good to have you along with us. Just about 20 minutes right now after the top of the hour. Our next guest here, let me give you a little background on our next guest, Todd Kendall. He's an economist and senior vice president with Compass Lexicon. A new report was recently released that clearly demonstrates that campus efforts to divest from fossil fuels backfires and, in fact, cost the divesting institutions enormous amounts of money. The report specifically analyzes the fixed costs related to executing often complicated transactions and then actively managing an endowment to ensure it remains compliant with ever-changing definitions of what it means to actually be fossil-free. Well, in other words, regardless of the symbolic opinions around divestment or the view on whether or not having fossil fuels in your portfolio will carry an impact, this report shows that divestment has a real cost for endowments, no matter the motivation. And Todd is here with us to explain what all this means. Tom Kendall, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Great. Glad to be here with you, Bill.
Well, this report authored by Professor Bessenbinder of the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University on the financial impacts of divestment from fossil fuels on endowments and pension funds. First of all, Todd, why the report to begin with?
You know, this question of fossil fuel divestment certainly has a lot of noise on university campuses, college campuses across the country. And so we thought that there needed to be some sort of hard-headed economic analysis of this question to see really what the costs and benefits are. So we kind of tackled it and really tried to figure out what investors have to think about when they consider this question.
Well, there's a lot of innuendo suggestion, anti-fossil fuel sentiment, but let's get the facts in the way and let's see if we can educate people and bring them to some point of wisdom, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it really does not matter what your view on fossil fuels or green energy may be. When it comes to divestment, what we really looked at is just the really basic costs of selling off certain stocks and buying other stocks and keeping a portfolio that, you know, all of your listeners who may have a 401k or some other investment plan of their own are familiar with. When you sell stocks, you have to pay fees and expenses, and that's true for colleges and universities as well. Mm-hmm. We found that those fees really add up over time in the case of fossil fuel divestment, and over a 20-year period, they can eat away up to 12% of a portfolio's value. And so for mm-hmm. these colleges and universities, that can be easily millions or even billions of dollars, and that's money that could have gone to fund student scholarships, reductions in tuition, research and technology, all the great things that colleges and universities do. So ultimately, it's really the students and the alumni who sort of get robbed by this divestment proposal.
And these divestments are turning into, in actuality, as Bloomberg put it, an empty gesture, huh?
Yeah, that's right. It's really a bumper sticker sort of policy. It might feel really good to slap your opinion on the back of your car, but ultimately it doesn't convince anybody and it doesn't do anything to change what these companies do. It has no real benefits, but it does, as I said, have these real substantial costs. So ultimately it's kind of a very costly bumper sticker.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one thing to put your money where your mouth is, but when that money gets down to your wallet, if you can understand the connection and see it, you probably go, oh, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time, maybe, huh?
Yeah, right. And, you know, people who donate money to their colleges and universities want to support students and support faculty and keep their universities doing well. And they have a right to know that their funds are being invested wisely and well.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you say, at a time when, as we know, educational expense continue to be on the rise, probably one of the fastest growing categories of all elements in our country today, we don't need to be losing money, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, fossil fuel divestment is a policy that ultimately, you know, even beyond the cost that we calculate in this report, you know, there's lots of other analyses out there that say there may be even additional costs beyond what the 12% that I mentioned before.
Right. Now, they used a sample, what, of 30 universities on this?
We looked at specifically 30 universities, but, you know, it's really a basic fundamental economic analysis that would apply to really any university or really any investor of any sort.
Well, what do you want? What do you want the people to take away from this, Todd?
I think the bottom line is that fossil fuel divestment is a policy that really has no real benefits. It doesn't make the world greener, regardless of what you think about what the government or anybody else should do about global climate change. This is a policy that's just really a waste of time, no benefits, and very substantial costs.
That's the bottom line of this whole situation. Is you look at it with traditional economic standards, and it just really doesn't pass the so what test then.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Well, on this in terms of, here it is, we're getting this information, and you've got so much this counterculture opposition to fossil fuels. It seems to be sexy and the thing to be anti-fossil fuels, but as you say, there's a lot more is behind that bumper sticker saying, and are you willing to really fall on your sword and let it cost you a lot of money in the process of holding to some of these green energy ideas that do not seem to be holding water here?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, certainly there's lots of different ways to conserve energy and lots of different things that you can support that at least have the possibility of having some benefit to the environment. But divestment really is not one of them, and it's really a distraction from other things that people could be doing.
Well, you know, and at a point when we really need to focus on things that are really going to move things in a positive direction, I mean, I've maintained that, if green energy is in the future, then there's a responsible way to feather that in. But to do it at the expense that we're doing with, questionable return on investment, if any, this is going to be a tough deal. So they could end up, the green energy interests could end up hurting themselves in the long run, because when you consider about all the money that's been invested here with little return on investment to speak of, and then you look at, you know, let's take it to the next step and address these matters as Professor Bessenbinder did, then you realize, you go, wow, we're like, kind of like with my conversation with the economist Stephen Moore earlier, you find yourself like Don Quixote fighting windmills here.
Yep, I think investors really need to think about the costs and benefits of anything, including fossil fuel divestment, before they jump in.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that you got these institutions, which is just a sample of what's out there, and you go, whoa, this is a movement here, but you guys are leaving a lot of money on the table and letting go of a lot. Todd Kendall, thank you so much for coming with us. Where can the good folks go for more information?
All the data and the analysis that went into the study, you can read the whole study online, lots of different places, one of which is divestmentfacts.com.
Divestmentfacts.com, that easy. Todd Kendall, economist, senior vice president with Compass Lexicon. Thank you, Todd.
I had what many would call the Cadillac of insurance plans with my company. It covered everything, and that's what got us started thinking, well, what is everything? Are we indirectly paying for people to use services that we don't believe in or want to be a part of? And MediShare was the perfect answer for that.
I felt such relief switching over to MediShare. I wasn't paying for anything that I didn't believe in. I was actually able to stand up for what I believe in, and I was able to put my money where my faith is.
We're part of this great program, and it really costs us less than insurance.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your health care. For your free information guide, call 855-BIBLE-11. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical health care. Call 855-BIBLE-11. That's 855-BIBLE-11.
My computer is so slow, it's making me crazy.
I used to have that problem.
Did you quit using a computer, or did you buy a new one?
Well, I called Geeks On Site. They made an appointment to visit my home and showed up the same day.
You mean they didn't ask you to bring your computer to a shop? That's what happened when I called a support company.
Geeks On Site can go to your home or business or even repair your computer online. They have 24/7 emergency service.
If you're having problems with your PC or Mac, call Geeks On Site. 1-800-591-1682. Our friendly certified computer repair experts are available 24/7. Call now for a free diagnosis. 1-800-591-1682. Data recovery, virus removal, and maintenance for all laptops, desktops, printers, and networks. That's Geeks On Site for friendly certified computer repair experts available 24/7 over the phone or in your home or business. Just call 1-800-591-1682. That's 1-800-591-1682. 1-800-591-1682.
According to the Mayo Clinic, your bones are continuously changing. New bone is made and old bone is broken down. Now, when you're young, your body makes new bone faster than it breaks down old bone, and your bone mass increases. Makes sense, doesn't it? Most people reach their peak bone mass at around 30. After that, bone remodeling continues, but you lose slightly more bone mass than you gain. Now, how likely you are to develop osteoporosis, a condition that causes bones to become weak and brittle, depends on how much bone mass you attain by the time you reach age 30 and how rapidly you lose it after that. The higher your peak bone mass, the more bone you have in the bank, and the less likely you are to develop osteoporosis as you age. Well, at Bill Martinez Live, we focus on absorbability of bone-building calcium, magnesium, vitamin D3, and boron. Try our 98% healthy body, bone, and joint pack. Find us at BillMartinezLive.com, Youngevity, or call 855-305-8320.
You're listening to Bill Martinez Live.
Lord, can you tell me how far is heaven? Yeah, Lord, can you tell me how far is heaven? I just gotta know how far. How far is heaven? Yeah, I just gotta know how far.
We're back with you 28 minutes before the top of the hour. A little Spanish music here, and kind of a bit ironic, Scott, don't you think? I mean, we're going to talk with an Iranian-American Muslim comedian on having hyphenated identity in America. She's written a new book, How to Make White People Laugh. She is a TED Senior Fellow who's been named one of the world's 50 funniest women by the Huffington Post. Nagin Farsad has, with her work as an award-winning stand-up comedian, filmmaker, actor, and writer, been recognized and praised internationally for her unique and timely brand of social justice comedy. Nagin, I wish I'd have had some Iranian bumper music to play for you instead of some, you know, a little Salvador, but, you know, we just try to transition, you know what I mean?
Well, that's just as hyphenated as I am, so I feel like it goes well.
Well, there's no doubt this hyphenation of America has done more to divide than unite us. That's been my perspective. But I think sometimes, we need you, Nagin. We need your perspective to kind of, bend up the roads of seriousness a little bit so we can kind of, chuckle at some things. But, you know, some of these issues, I guess the reason we can laugh about them because they are still serious issues, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think the funny thing is, like, growing this kind of hyphenation also when it's not, like, discussed on a national level, when we don't have icons or, like, mainstream role models, it leads to a lot of identity confusion. You know, I grew up in Southern California, and, you know, all of my youth, I spent kind of longing to be Mexican because they were the most readily...
See, that's why we played Salvador for you. You know, that and you know, and everywhere you go in Southern California, there's really good Mexican food. I mean, we're here on the West Coast from Florida. We cannot find good Mexican food in Florida, so we're like... We're like, you know, between In-N-Out burgers and Mexican food, we're just like indulging ourselves right now.
I was drowning in it. We would have just a casually wonderful Mexican meal during our lunch break in high school, and it was, you know, when we would run off campus and engage in shenanigans. And it's funny because everyone, you know, 40% of my high school was Mexican, and you know, it's a culture that everybody understood. You know, everyone could roll their R's and be like Rodrigo Arreta, you know, like everyone, even, you know, the whitest of white people just like understood Mexican culture in a way that they just couldn't get wrap their head around mine. And so my name would come up and they would be like, Megan, McGreem, you know, and they just couldn't figure it out. They'd be like, McGee. And once a teacher literally said to me, Noodle, and she just called me Noodle Farsad and laughed, which left a fair amount of psychological scarring. To this day, I'm an adult. I'm still dealing with it. Anyways, but the point is I longed to kind of be a part of these other minority groups because they were larger and they were more identifiable, and I was in such an underpopulated, you know, ethnic minority. And then in college and then in grad school, that meant, you know, getting a master's degree in African American studies, in which I was the only non-black person. And so I think that there are a lot of people like me. You're Filipino Americans, you're Romanian Americans, you know, you're Botswana Americans, who feel sort of like left in the lurch by the national conversation on race. So I want to just broaden that conversation, and kind of like give a voice to all these, you know, hyphenated peeps that don't really haven't, you know, it's not like there was a character in Friends who was Iranian American. You know what I mean? I didn't have very much to look up to growing up.
I know, and that's what they said, that Friends, you can't come up with a 21st century Friends series right now. I mean, that white pasty group is not going to play well in the 21st century, you know?
And in the New York context, and I live in New York City, it wouldn't make any sense. I mean, none of my friends look like that. I mean, I have white friends. Come on, some of my best friends are white. But this is nothing to do. Some people read the title of my book, How to Make White People Laugh, and they think it's like I'm anti-white or something crazy, which is not the case. And it is a satirical title. But yeah.
And that's pretty bad when you got to explain the title, right? You know,
well,
yeah, it is
that. But doesn't have a sense of humor.
Well, that's our society right now, especially right now in the midst of all this political environment we're in. Everybody's so uptight. They're questioning every sentence, every word. And it's like, oh, come on, give me a break. I mean, this is why we need your voice, Nagin, to break through and lighten people up a little bit, because we're missing the point in the process.
I mean, I think that's a really good point, because one of the questions that I get when I'm on the road, you know, I've performed all over the country, and one of the questions I get sometimes is, why don't Muslims denounce terrorism? And people are like, oh, what an offensive question. How offensive is that? And really, to me, it's not an offensive question, and it's not something that we should be censoring. It's a brave question, because A, we do live in this PC climate where people are afraid to just say what they, you know, what they're thinking, and B, the problem is that if all you're seeing on television is this linkage that Muslims are terrorists and violent, and that the ladies walk around, you know, with black shrouds over their heads as if floating in deserts, then that's what you're going to think about Islam.
Right.
I mean, you're not.
Yeah, right.
And so for me, they're not seeing a bunch of reasonable people denouncing terrorism. The fact of the matter is, I only know Muslims that denounce terrorism. So whenever I get that question, I'm like, oh, it's so funny. Like, I literally only can tell you the names of Muslims who do denounce terror. I don't know a single one who doesn't denounce terrorism. But then again, I'm a Muslim American who knows other Muslim Americans, you know, who are and were all reasonable people. And then the other thing is, like, you know, you don't generally see Islam presented as a range. It's usually just like whenever we see, you know, Islam depicted on television, it's just a bunch of people doing their prayers that look like a CrossFit workout. It looks like ridiculously intense, you know, and so we just get this notion that, like, everyone, you know, that being in a Muslim is this just obscenely intense thing, and that the praying is just too much, and I don't know, and that they do it five times a day, oh my God. And, you know, we also don't see the fact that there are also secular Muslims, you know, people like me, who, let's be honest, if I go to brunch today, I might have some bacon. And that's just the kind of Muslim I am.
Well, you just caused some Muslims to, you know, fall into a ditch right now. with that. But you know, it's interesting, Megan, to hear your perspective, because my perspective as a Hispanic, somewhat similar. You know, people are outraged, you know, with seeing the Mexican flag and these, you know, these riots or, you know, purported riots over Donald Trump and things that he said. But I'd say a lot of the Hispanics I talk with understand the reasonableness of having a wall, protecting the boundary. People that are here, you know, from Mexico, which is a percentage of people here, they want their jobs protected as well. And they feel like, look, at if the borders are wide open, their jobs are in jeopardy.
So
their family's future in jeopardy.
Are you pro-wall?
I'm pro-wall. I'm pro-boundaries. I believe a nation needs to have its boundaries. I mean, Mexico has its boundaries. You know, I'm not a globalist.
Right. What do you say when people say that there's actually net zero immigration? We're not actually facing an immigration crisis. Because the numbers suggest that there aren't Mexicans, you know, that we're not actually having Mexicans crossing the border. And this was maybe an issue like in the 90s or something, in the 80s and 90s. But now there's just not, the numbers don't bear it out. And I think what I think what is really upsetting to me about, you know, someone like Donald Trump is that he says really blatantly racist and bigoted things. And he says it on a national scale. And kids hear it. Like, if a kid is hearing Mexicans are rapists, they're going to go around thinking Mexicans are rapists. If they hear it enough times, that's what they think. And that's been my experience. When people hear, you know, Muslims are terrorists, that's just what they think about Muslims. They don't think any, you know, that becomes ingrained, you know. And so that's the kind of thing when we're talking about, like, you know, a national figure and what he says on the campaign trail, it really matters. Because I don't want, you know, and I have a dog in this race because I'm Muslim and I don't want to be put on a registry. You know what I mean?
But you know what? You know,
like,
what, Nagin?
Big government.
Big government. You and I need to continue this conversation. We're gonna have you back so we can continue this, because you and I have a lot more in common than we don't. And I want to answer that question, but we're out of time. Nagin Farsad on Bill Martinez Live. I promise you, we're gonna get her back. It's 19 before the top of the hour.
Vaping enthusiasts, head to VaporPalace.com. Choose from over 150 flavors and a selection of exclusive private stock vapor liquid you won't find anywhere else. New flavors are added every month, and our customer service is unbeatable. VaporPalace.com offers 15% off all vapor liquid on Fridays, and get 10% off every order with coupon code VAPOR10 at checkout. Combine the codes on Fridays for 25% off. The ultimate destination for the vaping enthusiast, VaporPalace.com.
This report is brought to you by Alcon. June is Cataract Awareness Month. Do you know your cataract IQ? Cataracts are one of the most common eye health issues experienced as we age, a condition that clouds the eye's lens, blocking or changing how light passes into the eye. Millions of people over the age of 60 have cataracts, and it is the leading cause of blindness worldwide. To spread awareness about cataracts and importance of understanding treatment options, Alcon has launched the Know Your Cataract IQ campaign. A 2016 survey conducted by Alcon of approximately 1,000 adults aged 60 and over who have been diagnosed but not treated for cataracts reported that only 25% of respondents said they have a full understanding of the condition. The results showed that while cataracts are not preventable, nearly half, 45%, of those surveyed did not know whether they are or are not, indicating that there is still a need for patients to talk to their doctor about the condition and best treatment options. To find out your cataract IQ and gain knowledge for you or a loved one, take the quiz at www.cataractiq.com.
This is an alert. If your business or church is building this year, you're about to pay more than you should. This could mean thousands of dollars more for your office, retail space, church, or warehouse. A General Steel building can save you as much as half the cost and time of similar conventional construction. And we're offering rebates of up to $20,000 to help you build today. Call General Steel for free information that could save you thousands. Call 866-91-STEEL.
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 Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro-1 G2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
The following is an incredible, life-changing free offer for anyone with hearing problems who wants to start hearing everything more clearly again. We're now offering free in-home trials of a revolutionary hearing breakthrough called Listen Clear to anyone who calls this special toll-free number now. 1-800-957-9364. Call in the next 10 minutes and you'll also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear is precisely designed by top audio engineers. It adjusts to let you find the perfect way to hear everything, wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And Listen Clear is so invisible, people may not even know you're wearing it. And it's so lightweight, you may even forget you're wearing it too. Don't miss this special life-changing opportunity to hear everything more clearly again for free with a 100% free in-home trial, free shipping, and even free batteries for life. For free information, call now. 1-800-957-9364. That's 1-800-957-9364. 1-800-957-9364.
Why do they dispense little colorful pills that restrict the production of stomach acid? Compromising digestion, leading further to malabsorption, leading even further to bone loss and many other health complications. Well, at Bill Martinez Live, we support structure and function of digestion with a healthy body digestion pack. Find us at BillMartinezLive.com Longevity or call 855-305-8326. Healthy acid, healthy body. That's 855-305-8326.
You've reached Bill Martinez Live. Bill Martinez Live.
Hey, we're fresh every day, Monday through Friday, 3 hours just for you, dedicated to solutions to the problems that we're facing today, pursuing the truth no matter where it leads us. This is Bill Martinez. We're live at 14 minutes before the top of the hour. You know, the makeup of today's modern family isn't like we've seen before. It's not just one mom and one dad and a few kids. Today's modern family is comprised of step-parents, step-kids, half-brothers, sisters, adopted kids, and siblings, and so on. It's like the TV show, right? For the most part, our society is embracing this modern and blended family, but it turns out our system isn't so open. In fact, the reality is that in most cases, step-parents have no legal rights to their stepchildren, and there are certainly unspoken rules and anxieties that don't exist in first families. Now, when it comes to adoption, it's not so official either. There's a process called rehoming. I don't know if you've heard of that term, but I've heard that term tossed around here recently. And rehoming, wow, yes. Unlike standard adoptions, this involves adoptive parents giving away their adopted children to strangers without any background checks or legal involvement. Now, our next guest here, Julie Lawson Timmer, has written a book called Untethered. She's an author and attorney, and she's bringing to light these very serious issues. She also serves as a brilliant exploration of the bonds that truly form a family, bonds that foster the kind of love that knows no bounds. It's not about genetics. It's about the love that these families, have for one another, and the need to transcend the system that they're having to deal with today. Julie Lawson Timmer, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Hi, nice to be here, Bill.
Well, congratulations on the book. It is a novel, Untethered, a story that presents a real-life problem that we're facing here in America today.
Yeah, it sure is. And like you say, the book involves two kinds of families. One is a blended family. There's a stepmother who's been raising her 15-year-old stepchild for the last 5 years, and her husband dies before the book opens, leaving open the question of where the 15-year-old goes. Does she stay with the stepmom who's come to love her as a daughter, or does she go back to her biological mother, who's actually not been very involved in her life at all but now has sole legal rights? And then, yeah, the second family, like you said, deals with this rehoming. They adopted a child out of foster care, and that child had some mental health issues that they were not prepared to deal with. And so they gave her away to strangers on the Internet without a background check. And that's happening in the United States today.
Well, again, if the issue comes down to, Julie, is that does life matter whether it's black, white, or anything else in between? I mean, you know, it seems like we're getting down to that core question of the importance of life.
Right, and the scary thing about these adopted children is, you know, these are children who've already been abandoned by their biological parents, so already their life is challenged and is sadder, and maybe they've undergone a lot of trauma. And so they're looking for this forever home with adoptive parents, and sometimes it doesn't work out. And I want to be clear, these families are in crisis. They're not adopting children and just to give them away. Most people adopt children because they want to give them a lifetime home of love and happiness. But if they're not prepared to deal with these children who have, in some cases, significant mental health issues, they find themselves in this terrible catch-22 where they're desperate to provide a good home for the child, but desperate also to keep their own family safe. And so, you know, desperate times, as they say, call for desperate measures, and some people in a real crisis turn to the Internet to give away these children.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, this isn't like some pet you got at Christmas time that you realized, hey, look, I'm not prepared for. I mean, this is a real live child, but to do something to the point of eBaying your child out, I mean, this is incredible.
Yeah, it really is. It's a really sad situation for the child. It's a sad situation for the parents who find themselves in the position where they feel there's no other solution for them to use.
Yeah, the psychological impact, as you say, I mean, here it is. You're already dealing with some sense of rejection. Now you're going to carry this on. It's going to reproduce itself. I mean, what kind of damage are we, you know, putting upon these children?
Right. We have no idea. We also have no idea how many children have been involved in rehoming because, you know, this is sort of an underground thing that people do online, and there isn't any state or federal agency that tracks children once they've been adopted. So, you know, there could be people on your street who have rehomed children. There could be people in your city. There could be, you know, we just have no idea how many kids, and we don't know where these kids end up. Are they given to a family and then they find success in that family, or are they then given to another family and another one? Do they find themselves in trafficking streams somewhere,
exactly,
which is a huge problem with this population of vulnerable children?
Well, you imagine, I mean, traffickers are looking, you know, looking at this opportunity as a windfall opportunity for them. I mean, kids are being rejected. Why not? I mean, you know, traffickers are going to say, hey, we, I am your daddy. We are your new family. And there you go. I mean, this is a huge, huge disaster, this whole idea of rehoming that has taken place here. This is just incredible to me as I get my brain around this. I mean, I'm dealing with other issues of human trafficking, but now to see that this is taking place, this is quite eye-opening, Julie. I was first drawn, I got to tell you, when I got your book Untethered, there is a lot to that title. How did you come up with that title?
You know, the title really comes from the point of view of the main character, Char. She's the stepmom. Mm-hmm. It started with her feeling, you know, when her husband died, she didn't only lose her husband, she's losing her entire family because her stepdaughter is going to be taken away from her now. And then I realized the stepdaughter feels the same way. She's been with this stepmom who she loves for years and years and would love to stay with her, and she's now being pulled away from that stepmom. And then the child, the 10-year-old who was rehomed, it also is not tied or tethered to any family because she's been, you know, disposed of by her biological mother for some reason and now by the adopted family. So you have these three people, Char and Allie and Morgan, these three characters who are all untethered and desperately seeking somebody that they can feel tied to or bonded to.
Yeah, and welcome to Real Life America. You know, you talk about the legal implications here as an attorney, Julie. You know it all so well. I mean, it's one thing to be a stepchild. Now, if you're, in a sense, kind of trafficked through the rehoming process, you know, what kind of legal standing does, the rehoming family have?
Well, you know, there are some already it's illegal to abandon or neglect your child. And so if a family were caught doing this, the state could press those charges. The problem is catching this in the act. Mm-hmm. There are some states, there are a handful of states who have already enacted laws criminalizing rehoming, and another handful who have proposed that legislation. There's also been federal law proposed. And I think that the best thing some of these states and the federal proposed law are doing is asking for beefed up post-adoption services, particularly with mental health, so that if you have a family in crisis because their adopted child has experienced some early childhood trauma, the best thing to do is to give that family mental health services that are adequate and affordable so that that child can be helped and that family can then be helped to stay together.
Well, Julie, as you bring out, I mean, this is part of the challenge that we're faced with today is that children today are born with such, such things that are so foreign to you and I when we were growing up. I mean, this just wasn't part of the daily vernacular. I mean, today it's not uncommon for these children, especially, you know, that end up in the adoption area, is there are some mental flaws and disabilities that come along, and it's not their fault. The effect of some irresponsible parents or whatever, you know, go on and on you could talk about, or just you get the regular possibility of somebody coming out and being less than, and now they become the responsibility of this adoptive parent. And that, you know, we know that that can be disruptive when you have a child that requires an inordinate amount of attention.
That's exactly right. And often parents who want to adopt aren't given enough training, and they're not given enough background in how to deal with these issues. And often they're not told what issues this child may have, and that we've seen that occur with international adoptions, where they're just not given all the information they need. They're not given all the training they need. And then once the child's in their home, they're not given the support that they need from the community, from the state. And so, you know, these children, you know, it seems like they're being set up to fail, and it seems like these adoptive parents are being set up to fail as well. So
exactly.
If more help can be given and more training, that sure would be great.
Well, without a doubt, Julie, because you're fighting the odds here. I think it's tough enough raising a child when you have the mother, the biological mother and father involved, because there's aspects of that child that are endemic to each individual adult. You know, oftentimes, you know, my wife will come in and say something about our son that she just doesn't quite understand. Well, I understand it because that child is of me. That part of that child's characteristic, it's no big deal. I mean, I get it. Because it's like me. And by the same token, there's certain demonstrations that more reflect her that just cause me all kinds of brain damage. And then she looks at me like, you know, why is that a big deal for you? That's nothing, you know, because that's right in her wheelhouse. It's consistent with her DNA and psychology, and it's easy. So, you know, it's tough enough, as I say, raising a child today with all the options that are available for these kids. And, you know, you've got that dynamic. Now you're going to raise a child, and you're not biologically attached. That is a tough deal and takes an incredible amount of grace.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, congratulations on the book. Thank you so much for coming on the show and for talking about this. I'm sure some people are really going to start to, check out some of these other issues, rehoming and those issues that we talked about. This is quite provocative. Your book is available at all the usual places, right, Julie?
Yeah, that's correct. It's available today.
Available today, and of course, we'll have it linked on our website at BillMartinezLive.com. Julie Lawson-Timmer has been with us. Her book, Untethered, a great novel, great read. It will open your eyes to what is happening in our country today. It's just about 2 minutes before the top of the hour. This is Bill Martinez. We're live.
We use mobile devices right against our bodies every day, but growing scientific evidence has emerged showing serious health risks associated with exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The solution is Defender Shield, the most effective mobile radiation shielding ever developed. Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation from cell phones, tablets, and laptops, and starts at just $64.99. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. For 10% off, use promo code GCN. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in mobile radiation shielding.
We call it the crapper, water closet, outhouse, or bathroom. But where do you go when there's nowhere to go? The answer is the Biffy Bag. The Biffy Bag is a pocket-sized disposable toilet that fits in your glove box, tackle box, toolbox, backpack, or purse. The Biffy Bag has everything you need for a sanitary and comfortable relief experience. It's ready to use in just seconds, and just toss it in the trash when you're done. It's your Biffy in a jiffy. BiffyBag.com. BiffyBag.com.